some of his many books. We're going to talk with Rick in just a second here, but we wanted to take the opportunity just to kind of to give you a little update on how we're doing. We're coming to the end of the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. We're raising the money for next year's programs. We decided we'd just set aside one day to say, folks, we got a little bit of a gap here to close. We're doing good, but we need the support of everybody who listens to the station. And Jay Pierce, he's our manager and the guy who sweeps up after hours. He's here in the studio. You were just telling me now about how we started out with, we said we wanted to raise $270,000.
Mm-hmm. By June 30th.
By June 30th. And so how are we doing?
Well, we have less than $265,000 to go. And that's how it works. And we've had 45 calls so far today, and people logging onto the website takes us over probably 50. And, you know, it's that one call at a time, David, that makes it all happen at 217-244-9455 or willpledge.org. It only takes a minute. I know that Rick Steves has something special he's going to want to offer. So you're going to want to get ready to call in. If you're going to do some vacationing this summer, you're going to want to call in and talk to Rick. He is the travel expert. If you listen to his show on the weekend or you watch his TV show, and you know what I have found, David? You know, we actually have three TV stations now. We have WILL, we have WILL World, and we have WILL Create. And if you're watching on the Create channel, you can see Rick Steves a lot. And it's just fascinating because here's a way that you can get, you know, some pictures in your mind of the possibilities of where you could go. My daughter and I were watching him night before last, Tuesday night. And we were watching the different places that he was going. And I think he was in Italy on this particular one. And we were just looking at things and just going, oh, my. And we were formulating plans in our head, you know. And what happens with Rick, this is what happens. We have finite amounts of money and finite time to do travel, right? Most of us do. Mm-hmm. And we want to get the most that we can out of our travel experience. And if you're like me and you're lousy at planning things on your own, you end up somewhere with 4 or 5 days and a little bit of money in your pocket, and you go haphazardly from place to place, and you have some hits and you have some misses, and you get done, and you always wonder what could have been if I'd actually known what I was doing. Rick takes that out of the equation for you because he puts it all together, and I'm gonna say this hour is – I'm going to go in my office and sit down and close the door and get a cup of coffee and listen because, you know, this is it. This is the guy, and he's going to have a special offer coming up, and you have to know this. When you take advantage of this offer, you're helping make Focus 580 programs like this available to thousands of people every day. And the other thing – when you contribute to WILL, you help WILL leverage money from the federal government because our federal grant is based in part on the amount of money that listeners contribute to the local public radio station. Right. So we're all in this. It's all a big partnership. It's going to be a fun
hour. Very good. Well, with that, we will say our guest this morning in this hour, Focus 580, Rick Steves. He wrote his first book, Europe Through the Back Door, in 1980. Since then, he's researched and written 35 different European travel guidebooks, published by all of them by Avalon Travel Publishing. His show, Travel with Rick Steves, the radio show here on WILL Saturdays at noon. You can see Rick Steves Europe on WILL TV Saturday afternoons at 5:30. And you can go to his website, ricksteves.com. And right here on the phone with us is Rick Steves. Hey, Rick, thanks very much for talking with us.
Oh, it's fun to be back with you, David. Thank
well,
you.
It's really great. And I really want to thank you because you've, over the years with us, been real generous with your time at times like this. So we certainly appreciate it. I wanted to talk a little bit about one book in particular that I've been looking at, and that is your book, Travel as a Political Act. And it's published by Nation Books. And I think it leads one to think about travel a little bit differently and why it is we do it.
Well, you know, for the same reason we value public broadcasting, because it respects our intellect, and we find that more and more forces in media out there try to dumb us down, I think in the travel industry, which is my thing, the industry wants to dumb down travelers. They make more money if we're just happy to lay on the beach and enjoy some fun in the sun and get excited about duty-free shopping and the power of our sunscreen, and cruisers that just are so excited they can eat five meals a day and still snorkel when they get into port. And that's not a bad thing in itself. In fact, I enjoy that kind of travel a fair amount. But I think that there's another aspect of travel that really is underrated and overlooked, and that is broadening your perspective through travel and respecting your intellect and expecting yourself to grapple with complicated issues as you travel. Go to the places the industry doesn't tell you to go and come home with the very best souvenir ever, and that's a broader perspective.
Yeah. I think this is a different, as I say, it's a different way of thinking about traveling. I'm sure that there are some, for example, if you set people down and say, well, where would you like to go? Some people, maybe they would want to go to places where they have family roots, or right. Maybe they just always have had this dream. They'd say, I want to go to Rome, or they would say, I want to go to Egypt and climb the pyramids, or, you know, stuff like right. that. But this is sort of different, and I would think that maybe, in fact, some people, you know, some of the kind of places that I know you've been and you talk about in this book, some people would say, well, I'm not really sure. You know, for example, on a recent show, I know I heard you talk about having traveled in the former Yugoslavia.
Right.
And gone to the places where there was not all that long, you know, within recent memory, there was civil war and people were killing each other. And some folks might say, well, wait a minute. Why do I want to go there? It just doesn't seem like it's not like the first thing that maybe right. would be on people's list.
Well, certain people want to go to their grave with leaving a bunch of scrapbooks of barbecues and smiley faces and happy memories, and that's okay. Thomas Jefferson said, travel makes a person wiser if less happy. You know, I want to grapple with reality on this planet, especially considering the impact our country has on the rest of the world. You mentioned some good examples there about where people travel and why would they venture away from where the tourism takes you? Belize is a good example. I just was thinking as you're talking. People go to Belize for snorkeling. Well, I went to Belize, and I enjoyed snorkeling, but I also went to Belize City, and I talked about what it's like to have a country so poor that their national art treasures are stored in Chicago until they have enough money to make a museum. Everybody goes to Luxor when they go to Egypt to see all the great, King Tut's tomb and Queen Hatshepsut's mausoleum and so on. That's great, but on the next day, I would rent a bicycle and go into the village and meet real people. Just last week, I was in Croatia and Bosnia. And I was filming some new TV shows that you'll be seeing on WILL. And we were in Dubrovnik, which is the Pearl of the Adriatic. It's just the most glorious. I love this place. But it was inundated with cruisers, and you literally couldn't walk down the streets. It was a human traffic jam, and I had to put the camera away. It was worse than a rainstorm. It's just we couldn't film that. It was just impossible. And all these people were shopping and complaining about the crowds and getting ripped off and seeing all the cultural cliches on stage and going back to their boat and having learned, I don't think, anything. Now, I enjoy Dubrovnik when the crowds aren't there, and I go 2 hours inland to Mostar, which is a big city in Bosnia, and I have dinner on what was the front line 15 years ago, the boulevard, the main drag through this town, and I have a rich experience. I spend less money, I make friends, I have good food, and I'm surrounded by all of these evocative, very thought-provoking sort of symbols of where the cultural tectonic plates rub together. This is where the Habsburgs hit the Ottomans, where the Cyrillic alphabet gives way to our Latin alphabet, where Christendom meets Islam, and where 15 years ago, people were killing each other in that city. Today, when you walk through the city parks in Mostar, they're filled with tombstones, and they all have the same date, 1993, because the cemeteries were within the line of sight of the snipers. Nobody could bury their loved ones in cemeteries, so at night, dressed in black, they would bury their loved ones in the city parks. Today, the children of those people who were killing each other are getting together. And I had dinner on the front line in a restaurant that's the first restaurant that opened up on that boulevard that's been open for 2 months, and got to talk to the guy who just opened the restaurant and what it's like. And towering over me is a church spire, the shape of a minaret, twice as tall as any of the other minarets in that town. And then the soundtrack is calls of prayers from the minarets, and little kids are learning to ride a bicycle with their training wheels on newly laid sidewalks, and the buildings are still pockmarked with bullet holes. That's an experience you can have. It's not dangerous. It's not expensive. You don't have to speak the language. You just simply got to get out of Dubrovnik and go 2 hours away in the bus and find yourself in a town that's real.
Yeah. Our guest this morning is travel writer Rick Steves, host of programs on radio and TV, authored a number of travel books. You'd like to get some travel information or maybe find out more about what he's about, you could look at his website, which is ricksteves.com. Also, you might want to look at his recent book, Travel as a Political Act. And we have a couple of callers here, and so let's bring them in. First, we'll go to Belgium, not the country, but the town that's not all that far from us. Line four, hello.
Hello, and good morning to you all.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to turn your conversation slightly into more of a moral question and your opinions about it. I know several people, you're one, who travel constantly, go many, many places. I have friends who go someplace once a month at your, you know, at your invitation, and I just talked to my son who was in Hanoi just a half an hour ago. So I know lots of people who travel, and they all enjoy it. It's a great experience. But then there's the moral dilemma that I have with it. When you're traveling this much, you're putting a lot of carbon into the high atmosphere. And for the thrill of an individual, it's at the detriment of the planet. And I have a real, how do we justify that?
Well, that's a very complicated and difficult issue, and I don't know. I'm struggling with that myself. It would be, I can imagine a time when it becomes immoral to travel. I think when you do travel, you're spending resources that could be used to help desperate people. I think that's a moral issue, and it comes with some stewardship. Personally, I make a pact if I'm going to go to the developing world and try to learn about that, to come home and make a difference so that it was resources well invested. As far as the environmental consequences, everything we do, drinking bottled water. I mean, somebody just told me every time you drink a bottle of water, about a third of that water is that much oil used to transport that water so you can drink it. That's a problem. Eating any food out of season, getting in your car and going somewhere, it all has environmental consequences. So I don't know. You raise a good question, and I could conceivably decide one day that I'm encouraging people to do something that is ruining the planet, and it's not a good idea. Right now, I'm trying to be carbon neutral. I wish somebody could tell me definitively how to do that. I think it's a kind of an easy fix, but we have just bought, we take 14,000 people on our tours in a year. So we purchased 6 trees for each person because we were told that many trees negates the amount of carbon you put into the environment. So at least we got, we spent the money to $80,000 to buy 80,000 trees. Hopefully that's helping a little bit, but it doesn't get us off the hook. You're right, and I don't know what the answer is.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Let's go to line one next. This is someone in Champaign. Hello.
Hi.
Yes.
I sent in a haiku to you, Rick, I don't know how long ago, a year or a year and a half, something, and my friends told me it was read on the air, and it went something like this. Rick Steves missed this one. Wonder of the modern world, Minden, Germany. Because my complaint was, in your Germany book, you didn't have anything north of about Cologne. Minden is up near Hanover, and it has a canal bridge. The canal that goes from Warsaw to Rotterdam crosses the Minden. Oh, I forget the name of the river, right?
Right.
It's at Minden. It's a feminine. Anyway,
well, the point you're making is good. I've skipped northern Germany, and I should do better on northern Germany. What I need to do is understand what Americans are interested in doing and try to provide information so they can travel better. And it's interesting when you look at Germany, the place where the Americans go today is pretty much what we occupied after World War II. We like to go to the American sector, which is Bavaria. Also, what's most interesting in Germany is the place with the richest heritage from the Middle Ages, and that was the best trade route in the Middle Ages where all the money was. Consequently, people were trading down the Rhine River and then down what we call in the tourist business the Romantic Road from Frankfurt to Munich and then over the Alps. And all along that road and that river are the best castles and the best fairy tale medieval towns and, frankly, the best tourism. In my books, I'm pretty clear that I don't cover the countries thoroughly. I say this is my assessment of the best month in that country. So I've got a 600-page book on Germany. It doesn't cover Minden and a lot of places in the north because I say flat out this is just the top month in Germany, and I don't think Minden makes the cut. My job is to cut through all the superlatives and tell people what I think, from my experience, is the most interesting and diverse travel. I'm tired of hearing people say they can spend a lifetime in Florence. Yeah, I know you can spend a lifetime in Florence, but we Americans have the shortest vacations in the rich world. I got 1.5 days. Now, how should I use them? My job is to boil it down that way. So I hope to do more of northern Germany in the future, but the best of Germany from most Americans' point of view is Berlin, of course, and then Bavaria and the Rhine.
Well, I hope you give Minden a look, because...
I'll put Minden on my list, and thanks for sending us a haiku for people who don't know on our radio show, and I'm thrilled that it airs on WILL Saturdays at noon, I guess. Mm-hmm. Occasionally, we share the haiku poems of travelers that kind of bring back their passions and share it poetically.
I think this is an engineering marvel, because they just enlarged it in the last 2 decades when the East opened up.
Oh, that's great.
So, and it also, at Magdeburg, I guess there's another bridge.
Yeah, well, I've just scratched this. I've been going to Europe for a third of my adult life, 4 months a year, every year since the mid-70s, and I've just scratched the surface, really. I just got back 3 days ago from 2 months in Europe and went to a lot of places I didn't know very well, and I'm always trying to make it better. So thanks for paying attention.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the call. I've got somebody else here I want to get to who's waiting, a caller in Greenup. This is line number 2. Hello.
Hi, Rick. I very much enjoy your shows. I never get tired of listening to them and watching them. I've traveled in Europe quite a few times. I first went there in 73 as a college graduate on a backpacking trip. Uh-huh. And I've been to 71 countries since then. Mm-hmm. One place I've missed, I really want to go to, and by the way, I'm an ethnobiologist, so I like to study the environment and cultures. Bulgaria is a country I would like to go to, but I've heard some mixed reports about it. I've heard there's quite a lot of crime, maybe some gangs that might harass tourists. I'm just wondering if you have any tips or pointers on Bulgaria. I'd like to go to Plovdiv and the Rodopi Mountains.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's funny you ask, because I've had a personal affinity for Bulgaria ever since the Cold War days. I went there back when I was a backpacker also. And it's interesting you say you've heard some scary things about Bulgaria. Well, they do have a mafia. They do have... culture of corruption, and there's some certain dangerous areas, but that's the same anywhere. And I've never felt uncomfortable in Bulgaria. We went there with our film crew, and remember, when we're there with our camera, every thief in town knows where we are, and we've got a $100,000 high definition camera we're toting around. It wouldn't take a rocket science to figure out how they could do some damage that way. And I've never come into any grief with our gear, thank goodness, or our film crew. I love Bulgaria. It's got such an interesting sort of submissive past, submissive to the Soviet Union. They joked it was like the 18th Republic or something. It was just inclined to go in lockstep with the Soviet Union. And then since it's been independent, of course, they've embraced capitalism. But they do have this unfortunate sort of trend in a lot of countries where they say, the music changes, but the musicians stay the same. And you get one corrupt government, then you get a new corrupt government with the same people in power. And that's unfortunate. But Plovdiv is wonderful. The Rodopi Mountains with the great monasteries up there are great. I was just in Montenegro and Bosnia, and you get that Serbian Orthodox and that Russian Orthodox flavor. And it really is a fascinating area to travel if you get a chance.
Great. I've also spent a lot of time in Greece, probably over 20 trips that involve Greece. I was thinking of making a trip from Venice down through the Balkans to Greece. How does that sound for a plan?
Well, Albania is one of the most remote and complicated countries to travel, and it's wide open now. It's just very, very poor. But if you're going from Venice down through the Balkans to Greece, you either got to go around Albania or through Albania. All the tourists seem to be in Slovenia and Croatia. I just spent 20 days there this last month filming 3 TV shows. We did one on Slovenia, which is the little alpine country that nestles south of Austria with its own Alps. And then Croatia, which has most of the coastline and all the tourism. And then to the interior, you've got Serbia and Bosnia and Montenegro and so on. Bosnia and Montenegro are opening up, and they've got a lot of charm. I was just in both those countries and had a blast. Serbia is not very popular for tourism, and you just have to kind of take a bus through that and get on down to Greece, where things become very mainstream and front door.
I've heard some good things about Macedonia, a lot of interesting sites. Have you been there? Do you have any comments on Macedonia?
Yeah, I've never found any interesting sites in Macedonia. I mean, there's interesting sites compared to lousy sites in Macedonia, but compared to everywhere else, I think Bulgaria is more interesting. I would think Croatia is more interesting. I would think Hungary and Greece are more interesting.
How about the people and safety in Macedonia? Would that be fair?
I, I think if you use common sense, you're reasonably safe anywhere in Europe. You can get yourself in trouble in London or Chicago or Madrid, or you can be safe in Macedonia or Bulgaria, depending on how smart you are. You just don't want to go into dark areas. You want to stay in well-populated areas. You want to leave your valuables in the hotel, and you want to assume that beggars are actually pickpockets and thieves. When a beggar approaches you and they say they want a euro, they really want your wallet, and you just got to be on guard that way.
Yes. Well, thanks a lot.
All right. Thank you. Let's talk with someone in Champagne. This is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
One of the things I commend Rick Steves for is that the push to understand other cultures and other countries and such, and I know he takes a strong position. I think there was a conversation about Cuba and the thing, and pretty much says the way he feels about, you know, our policy sometimes here. But just a comment that they were talking about, you're flying and stuff and that. How much, devastation do we do in terms of wars? And if we had a better understanding of people, to keep us out of some of these things. So that's my only comment.
All right.
Well, that's a very good comment, and that's what motivates me to write my book, Travel as a Political Act, because I think it is flat-out good character to know people before you bomb them. It should hurt when you kill people. Sometimes you have to. I'm not saying, you know, our military is wrong. I'm saying if we go to war, it should be a painful decision. Governments, by their nature, try to dehumanize the enemy, and when you travel, you humanize the enemy. That's why I went to Iran with my film crew, and that's why I was so thankful to have an avenue to share what I learned on public broadcasting. I'll tell you, just between you and me, the underwriters did not want their name on a show talking about Iran because they would be thought of as a Jane Fonda mouthpiece of the enemy or something like that. Well, thank goodness we have public broadcasting that can bring you content that respects your intellect, that deals with complicated, easy to mischaracterize kind of challenges that we have, and that it's not shaped by our advertiser interests. We appreciate our corporate underwriting, that's for sure, but any corporation that supports public broadcasting knows that they don't get to change the content, much as they would be used to changing the content in the commercial media world. So we went to Iran, had a rich experience, came home, and humanized that place. Now if we go to war with Iran, it'll be a little more painful, and I think that's a good thing. I mean, I believe that every bullet that flies and every bomb that drops has my name on it because I'm a taxpayer, and sometimes those bullets have to fly and those bombs have to drop, but I take personal responsibility. When I travel, I better understand the complexity of things. I know when Ahmadinejad says something really mean about Israel or gay people or America, he's really shoring up his political base. He got elected by the same margin as President Bush, and who elected him is less educated, small-town, fundamentalist Muslim people who are scared to death about Western values. When I was in Iran, mothers walked across the street to make one point with me. They said, when they saw I was an American TV producer and so on, they said, we just don't want our children to be raised like Britney Spears. They're scared that their kids are going to be boy toys and drug addicts and crass materialists. And for good reason. Not that they would be, but that's what their life experience and their media has shown them. And they grew up under the Shah, and they were bragging during the Shah period that the miniskirts are shorter in Paris, shorter in Tehran than they are in Paris. Well, that may be fun for you and me, but if you're a concerned parent in a small town in Iran, and you've got a dictator put in there by the United States that's bringing miniskirts into your society and treating girls as advertising pieces, that's a scary thing. Hmm. Americans don't think that's a big deal, but if you go to a car show and you see some babe in a tight dress on a revolving platform advertising a hot car, people in Iran think that is disrespectful to women. We think that's just good business, apparently. Well, it's not an issue of right or wrong. It's an issue of we need to understand those people if we're going to come to a peaceful solution to problems that divide us. Yeah.
So did you say, you know, as far as I can tell, probably most Americans would also say they wouldn't want their daughters to be raised like Britney Spears?
I did. I had to say that, too. And I just thought it was a real interesting issue that they came across the street to tell me specifically that. But I learned so much when I was in Iran. I just can't. That's one reason. That's 50 pages out of this 200-page book, Travel as a Political Act, was my Iran journal from our experience there. And, you know, we were stuck in a traffic jam in Tehran. There's, 10 million people in Tehran. And suddenly my driver just blurted out, death to traffic. And I almost had whiplash going, what? I thought it was death to America. And he said, no, here in Iran, when anything's really frustrating and out of our control, we say death to that. Well, that doesn't excuse him saying death to America, but it does make it a little more of a complicated issue. And I started thinking about the equivalent of that and damn those teenagers. You know, sometimes when we're frustrated by teenagers making a racket or something, we don't want them to die and burn in hell for an eternity, but we do say damn those teenagers, and it just means turn the music down. There's people trying to sleep, you see. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of fun to take our misperceptions. A lot of Americans are very hung up and disappointed and angry about the treatment of women in Iran. Well, there's an explanation for it, and I don't want to excuse it, but I do want to try to understand what their idea of respect for women is. Because, as I mentioned, we use women as advertising pieces.
Yep.
We have Britney Spears and babes at car shows, and they've got a situation where they don't worship in the same room because it's distracting if you're trying to focus on God to have women bending down in front of you.
We're at our midpoint here, and we really need to take a moment here to encourage people to support the station. I have somebody here who is hanging on. They're on a cell phone, and I appreciate the fact that they're paying here. And I do want to get them on the air, but it either they can hold, that's great, or if they just want to hang up and then call back and save a little money, we can do that too. But we really need to spend at least a couple of minutes here encouraging people to support the station. And I really and Rick, you were good enough to say, well, maybe there's something you thought you could do to kind of help us out here.
Oh yeah, I just am a soldier for public broadcasting. And a half an hour ago, when I realized our interview was going to be also a pledge drive, I just thought this is great because we can let people who are supporting WILL get this book that I've just written, which is what we're talking about: travel as a political act. And I got to mention, I came to Urbana once a long time ago, and I had such a great time, and I was on the radio, and it connected with your listening audience so strong, it inspired me to start my radio program, and now it's in 150 cities every week, but it really was born in Urbana, and so I have a special place in my heart for WILL, and it's thrilling for me to think that people who want to support the station now can get this book, Travel as a Political Act. Again, we decided it'll be for a $60 pledge of support to public radio in your community. We'd love to send you, as a thank you, the brand new, hot off the press, I just got this a couple weeks ago, sent to me in Europe, and I'm so excited about this book, Travel as a Political Act. You'll also receive the map that I've designed that locates all of my favorite hard-to-find discoveries. It's designed as a thank you for people supporting us and a great companion for people enjoying our TV show. That's my Rick Steves European Planning Map. And you'll get the 64-page special edition of our newsletter that highlights all my favorite destinations in Europe and explains all the work I do in Seattle with my 70 workmates at Europe Through the Back Door. Those three gifts, the Travel as a Political Act book, the map, and the newsletter, would be yours as a thank you if you can support WILL right now at that $60 pledge level.
Well, that is great. We appreciate your generosity. Martha Deal is one of our producers. She's here in the studio. Okay, so what do we want people to do now if they want to get in on this?
We want them to call 217-244-9455 and make that $60 pledge to get the book and those extras that Rick mentioned. I'm going to turn this back to David and Rick because they do this so much better than I do. But first, I want to thank Emil in Twin Lakes and Annalise in Brooks for their contributions. Very much. We appreciate what you're doing for us and helping us pay our bills. And toward our 250 callers, we have 195 to go. Thank you so much to the 55 people who have called in with a pledge today.
All right.
Back to Rick and David.
I'll just give the number real quick. If you want to call to make a pledge, 217-244-9455. Or you can go online to our pledge site. That's willpledge.org. If you can make a contribution of $60 or more, we have a really nice package of things that Rick has given to us, including a copy of his most recent book, Travel as a Political Act. It's published by Nation Books. Well, I really want to get to a caller here. They have been very patient with us on our line number
David?
Three. Rick?
If I could just, before we get to that caller,
sure.
Because the last caller mentioned from Champaign mentioned how our radio show dedicated a whole hour to Cuba. And that's kind of the beautiful thing about public radio is that we're able to go to places that you wouldn't talk about on commercial broadcasting. And people need to know when they're weighing, should I support WILL and public radio, that this is really good citizenship right now. We need honest media that can challenge us and respect our intellect and assume an attention span. And that's why I'm just so thankful to have public broadcasting as a producer and as a consumer of media. And if people recognize this, it really is flat-out good citizenship right now to make WILL strong in your communities by giving us a phone call.
All right. Well, let's talk with the caller here. We have someone on our line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I was just wanting to make a comment about what I think has been a change in guidebooks over the last couple of years with the online world, and that's rather than giving a lot of detail, they tend to give you know, this is what we think you ought to do, and this is the tour, and here's the URLs for all this stuff. And it makes them pretty useless when you take them along on the road because you're in a foreign country and you don't have internet access. And when you really want to know how much is this museum going to cost, they don't tell you anymore. And I'll hang up and listen after that.
Well, all right. What do you think about that?
Well, that's a very good comment. And we're in kind of a transitional stage right now. And I'm a little bit old-fashioned about information. For one thing, the web is a very powerful tool, but you don't know when you're reading the web who makes this information, whether they're saying good things or bad things about a hotel or a restaurant or an activity in your travels. Half of that information is put there by people who are either against or for that business. And I've found so many people deceived by information on the web. Again, it's a valuable tool, but if you appreciate a guidebook, it is written by a person who goes there in person and visits all those places with no conflict of interest and then reports on it. At least that's my philosophy. I know that in the future, everybody's going to be walking around with little handheld devices and GPS stuff and all that sort of Wiki, Yelp, you know, Urban Spoon kind of stuff. And that's kind of exciting. But right now, I do not rely on URLs and so on. It's in my book. The whole idea is this book is portable. It's designed. It cuts through the superlatives. And the intent is to give you the information so you can take advantage of my experience, and so you can have the most efficient trip, have the best experience, use your time smartly, and spend your money wisely. That's been my driving philosophy. I've got 70 people that work with me at Europe Through the Back Door, and I think we're the only people that update our guidebooks every year in person, visiting every place. I was just over there for 60 days, and I spent 20 days filming and 40 days visiting hotels and restaurants and taking the hikes that I recommend and talking to all those people and getting up to date. And boy, it is really exciting work, and it's important work when you consider a lot of people use those guidebooks to explore Spain or Italy or France or whatever. So it's important to have a good guidebook, I would say.
Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is travel writer Rick Steves. He wrote his very first book, Europe Through the Back Door, in 1980. And since then, he's researched and written 35 different European travel guidebooks. He has public radio show, Travel with Rick Steves. You can hear that on our AM station, WILL-AM, Saturdays at noon. He is also now doing a series on public TV, Rick Steves Europe, and you can see that on our television station, WILL-TV. That's Saturday afternoons at 5:30. You can look at his website, ricksteves.com, and we're talking some about what you'll find in his new book, Travel as a Political Act. It's published by Nation Books, and if folks can call and make a contribution to the station at the $60 level, we'll send you a copy. One of the things that I am wondering about, if you decide that you would like to travel to, well, some of the kinds of places perhaps that you talk about in this book that are less, I would say that they're less sort of conventional travel destinations.
Mm-hmm.
How would you suggest that people, or what kind of things would you suggest that people do to prepare in advance? I mean, I don't want to make it sound like you're saying people, you know, you're giving them homework assignments to.
Right.
But at the same time, you probably want to have some idea about what it is you're going to see.
Well, I mean, for 25 years, I've been a tour guide and taking 20 people around and showing them the whirling dervishes and taking them to the Rock of Gibraltar and, you know, stumbling around Zurich and showing them the art in the museums. The more you know about what you're looking at, the more interesting it's going to be. I mean, when you go to Spain and you consider the Civil War there with Franco and Hitler bombing Guernica and all the ethnic groups being kept down, you know, that can be a couple of snapshots, or it can be a fascinating look at the struggle of people who consider themselves nations without states. You know, I was just in Catalan in France, or in Spain, and I called them a region, and they said, "We're not a region." If you call us a region, that agrees with Franco, saying we're part of Spain. We are a nation without a state. We are Catalan people. And in all our lifetimes, we've not been able to wave our flag or teach our children our language or even do our beloved Sardana dance in front of the cathedral after Mass on Sunday. Now, as Europe is uniting, nations are less threatened by regions because nations realize they're not really going to be players in the future, and it's going to be a united Europe with a passion for the ethnic variety of Europe, and the ethnic regions are free to wave their flags. Consequently, now you go to Barcelona, and the people are teaching their kids Catalan first and Spanish second, and they're waving their national flag instead of their soccer flag when they want to express their patriotism. And every Sunday after church at the cathedral, you got this beautiful Sardana dance. That's exciting. Now, I know to appreciate that because I've done a little reading on Catalan. I'm not a scholar about it, but it's just sort of basic stuff. A lot of travelers go in there, and they're just going to be kidnapped by all the little kitschy tourist attractions, and that's the way they travel. So I'm not saying it's an exclusive thing. I mean, I think travel should be recreation and enjoying the beach and just eating well and hanging out and killing time. But at the same time, you have a chance in a lifetime to better understand what's going on this planet. And I just love that. I mean, you can go to, I forget if we've talked about this, but I had a chance to go to Mazatlan. And at the same time, they were having the 25th anniversary of the assassination of Archbishop Romero in El Salvador. And I just told my wife, I'm sorry, Anne, I'm not going to be any fun on the beach. I need to go to San Salvador and march with these people as they remember Romero. And I was down there with priests and nuns who were excommunicated, and they explained to me part of their vow of obedience to the church is disobedience to the church with a capital C. And there's a concept right there that just blew me away. And I was with these people who were so committed to their faith and their work on this planet and their struggle of their people. And then we went to a monument in San Salvador that looks exactly like the Vietnam Memorial in Washington, D.C., with the tens of thousands of names chiseled onto it, loved ones tenderly touching those names and remembering their lost loved ones. And then I realized all the names on that memorial were killed by my country. Now, that's not right or wrong. I'm not saying maybe we should have killed all those people, but it's poignant. And for me to go down there and realize there's real people on the receiving end of our military is a valuable thing. It's not dangerous, and some people choose not to know about that. Personally, I just find it entertaining. I find it rewarding, and I find it ignorance is bliss, and the stakes are high, and I want to understand what's going on this planet. And when you travel, you get that. And, of course, when you, I guess I can segue into public broadcasting. That's why we appreciate and that's why we support public broadcasting. It's because it doesn't flinch when it comes to dealing with and grappling with complex issues that confront us today. We've not done a very good job since 9/11 of dealing with these challenges, and we're getting it together, but it really takes all of us to pitch in and smart ourselves up instead of letting people dumb us down.
You know, one of the things that I think all along you've always encouraged people to do when they travel is to get to know, try to get to know the folks in the places where you go. And for somebody like you who's been doing this for a long time, maybe that doesn't seem so hard, but I can imagine that some people either feeling shy or sort of uncertain, not being sure, you know, if this is a place where they speak some language other than English, how it is I'm going to do that, how it is I'm going to, you know, will people think that I'm strange, that there's something weird about me, that I'm a criminal, that, you know, who knows what, you know, people can think all these strange things. Well, what are people, if I try to strike up a conversation with a stranger on the street and most are, what are they going to think? Well, who is this guy? Is he a CIA agent? Is he just a crazy person? How you even approach that kind of meeting?
Last week, I was talking with a Serbian Orthodox priest high in the mountains of Montenegro, and he looked freaky. He, from a lot of people's perspective, long black beard, you know, funny hat and everything. And he joked that he said he was nervous around me because I had no beard. You know, and he humanized himself with that comment, and I had the greatest conversation with him. And I learned a lot. I don't speak the languages. You know, I just have a fascination with meeting people. And I have an assumption that people are just as curious about me as I am about them. And I love to make myself accessible so they can learn. But you just got to be on the ball. You go to a pub in Ireland, it's a pub. It's a public house. It's the neighborhood's living room. It's where people go when they're tired of talking with their wife, you know. And it's just you bring the dog, you play darts, you tell jokes, and if you sit at the table, nobody's going to talk to you. But if you sit at the bar, you've got all sorts of people talking to you because people know you go to the bar when you want to talk. Now, that's just a travel tip. And in my books, you know, you've got tips on how to catch the train and how to pack light and how to stay healthy. But the more challenging and important thing for me to do as a travel teacher is inspire and instruct people on how to connect with the people. And, you know, I'm running a business. I take 400 groups around Europe every year. I make these TV shows. I write all these guidebooks. And I get stressed out if one of my tours or one of my guidebooks or one of my TV shows is not connecting people with people. That's what makes it sparkle. That's what carbonates the travel experience. And if you're docile, you are part of the economy. They're herding you around in a group. They're taking you to the cafeteria where you watch the cultural cliches on stage and you buy a Polaroid photo with you and that snake charmer, and then it's back on the bus, back to the hotel, comparing your souvenirs and complaining about the air conditioning. Or you can break out of that situation and you can have coffee with that Serbian Orthodox priest and joke about beards.
Yeah. Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is travel writer Rick Steves. Some of what we're talking about here this morning you can find in his most recent book, Travel as a Political Act. It's published by Nation Books. You can find it in the bookstore, or if you make a contribution of $60 or more, we'll send you a copy with our thanks and his thanks. He has a radio show that we have here on WILL Saturdays at noon. Rick Steves Europe, now airing on WILL-TV Saturday afternoons at 5:30. And he's written many European travel guidebooks, and you can go down to the bookstore and look for those. Questions are welcome, or maybe you have a story about some place that you've been you'd like to share. 333-9455 and a toll-free, 800-222-9455. Well, one of the things that I have to ask is, now after having done as much traveling as you have and seen as many places as you have, is there still some place where you would say, you know, I haven't been there yet and I really want to go there?
Oh, yeah. I've just scratched the surface. I mean, I've spent 4 months a year for the last 30 years traveling, but I've decided long ago when I got my TV show going and everything that I want to honor the respect and the credibility I have with my readers and so on and really be good at what I'm doing. So I'm just focusing on Europe. For me, Europe is the wading pool for world exploration. If I wasn't, you know, doing that as my work, I'd be traveling in India and Japan and Indonesia and Thailand and Sri Lanka. Those are four or five of my favorite places. When I want to stoke the fire in my belly, I go down to Central America. I've yet to go to South America or Sub-Saharan Africa. You know, there's lots of exciting places I could go. My favorite place is India. I just really find India humbles you when you get a little self-assured in your way of life. Go to India and you realize there's a billion people that see it differently.
Yeah. Let's talk with someone in Champaign. Here's a caller right here, line one. Hello.
Hi. My husband and I are going to do the Cotswold walking tour in July.
Uh-huh. I'm
just wondering if you have any advice for us.
Oh, I love the Cotswolds. Those are the little villages that, in so many cases, a place is very affluent because of some sort of industry, and that was the sheep business way back in the old days. And sheep made all the merchants wealthy, and they built these great houses and charming little towns. And then something happened, and I don't know, there was cotton or something, and the sheep industry just completely died, and the place became so poor that it was just mothballed and ignored. And then in the modern age of tourism, in the 20th century, all of a sudden they go, wow, these are cute little places that used to be so fancy, and now they've been so ignored for 200 years, and they are rediscovered, and suddenly they become affluent again and very popular with tourists. And that's sort of the Cotswolds, and that's why the Cotswolds are so beautiful today and popular today, is because they were so poor that nobody built over them, and we can go and visit how they were in their heyday. And it's just perfect for hiking. The English are passionate about maintaining their freedom to walk. Every year, there's a certain day called a mass trespass, where all the walkers get out and they assert their freedom to walk anywhere in the land. Nobody can build fences without fun little gates and ladders over the fences, so the fences keep in and out the cattle, but not the people. The cool thing about the Cotswolds is you have all these charming little photogenic towns, characters, eccentric characters in all of them, wonderful pubs, wonderful B&Bs, and they're all an easy day's walk apart. Just remember, when you're in England, there's no bad weather, just inappropriate clothing, okay?
Okay, thank you.
All right, very good.
Thanks
again,
very much.
Other questions are certainly welcome. We have about another 5 minutes left in the program, 333-9455. That's the number for Champaign-Urbana folks. We do also have a toll-free line. That one's good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. Just tell go ahead.
I want to make sure. I've kind of bullied my book into a pledge premium thing here 2 minutes before showtime. I want to make sure this is not a mistake. I want to reiterate once again, if you appreciate WILL and public broadcasting in your community, and if you're enjoying this, and if you can afford it, it's just flat out good citizenship to support us now. And at that very reasonable $60 pledge, we'd love to thank you with my brand new 220-some-page book called Travel as a Political Act, which shares all of my favorite experiences and lessons learned all across the planet, in Iran recently, in El Salvador, Nicaragua, Turkey, Morocco, and all across Europe. And we'll also get the map I've designed that locates all my hard-to-find favorite little discoveries, and our 64-page newsletter giving you all the highlights in Europe and getting up to date on the work I'm doing with my film crew and so on. And all that's yours as a thank you if you can support WILO right now for that $60 pledge. So please, if you're going to get on board right now and get this book, Travel as a Political Act.
All right. Let's talk with at least one more person here. This is also someone who is listening in Champaign. Line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
As the energy situation arises, many of us are not ever going to be able to go to Europe. I would like to encourage what you do with television, what you do with broadband. We enjoy your tremendous expertise and your backup of 70-odd staff members could do a lot to teach us National Geographic style about these places that you go to that we will never go to. I hesitate to wonder how many gallons of gas you've used in your career.
But I've used as many gallons of gas as people use to fly to Notre Dame for a football game.
I mean, yes, it's the same sort of thing.
We do a lot of things that are insane. I'm holding a bottle of water here that was shipped 1,000 miles, probably.
Yes, from
I've
California.
I've got perfectly good water right here in Seattle.
Yes.
50,000 people fly to a stupid football game, and then they spend a fortune to go there and eat up all that gas, and I inspire people to travel around the world. You're right. This is a problem. I don't know what we should do, but I'm
I think we need a few more people like yourself. it is possible to learn about these places without necessarily going to them or having the tremendous capacity to go talk to the bishop or be at a place that we could never be in anyway, because we just, even if we went, we weren't going to see that sort of thing. You can give us so much, and I would encourage you to do more of that, more on broadband, and let people ask questions.
Thank you very much. I'm doing my very best to bring it home, but it saddens me to think that I would enable people to stay home and not travel, because it's just, for me, it's so beautiful to go over there and experience that. And it's not a zero-sum game. I mean, we all just have to consume smartly and thoughtfully, and there are ways to travel that are much less costly to the environment.
Oh, I think so.
I don't want to go to some resort in the middle of a desert that's sucking up all the water in a parched world where villagers are thirsty so I can have a golf course. I mean, that's the crass ugliness of tourism, and you see that a lot. And if you have somebody who's going over there on a people-to-people mission to come home and then employ their new perspective as a voting citizen of the most powerful country on this planet, when you step into the voting booth, you have this perverse sort of notion that what the outcome of this election affects people in the developing world more than me. It affects the environment more than me. Then you become, I think, a real agent for positive change. But in so many cases, I find by going and leaving our country, we come home and we become better stewards of a lot of important things. And I think travel can be a real good investment in that regard.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Appreciate what you're doing.
And again, to underscore what you've said, I think part of the argument that you're making and you make in the book is that people-to-people contact is a real important thing. And that if you're interested in minimizing international conflict, well, you can really make the argument that one of the ways you do that is to have people get to know each other.
You know, if Iranians could know us, and if we could know them, talking about the environment, think of the consequences on the environment of a needless war. And there are so many people that don't want to hate each other. They just want to get along with their lives. And there are so many forces that want to sow this misunderstanding and this fear so they can have their way with us. So it's a complicated issue, and I'm thankful that there's a forum to discuss this in the major sort of airwaves, and that's, of course, public broadcasting. And that's what we're celebrating right now, is the ability to get together and talk about this and grapple with serious challenges that really threaten our way of life and even the survival of our civilization.
Well, let's talk with someone next in Chicago. This is line three. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
first of all, appreciate your work, Rick, all these years. Taking a lot of your recommendations and done a lot of traveling. And I don't want to just watch it on TV. I want to go there.
Yeah, me too.
But quickly, Ben took my parents on a trip to Rome, followed some of your recommendations there, and also another separate trip to the north, driving trip through Bologna to Venice and into Switzerland and Zurich, which was wonderful. But my next trip to Italy, I'm debating between some of the coastal areas like
Amalfi Coast or something.
Yeah, the Amalfi Coast, and or something completely different, going to Sicily, and wanted to hear the differences and recommendations on that.
Well, when I think of Italy, and that's my favorite country. It's what keeps us in business here at Europe Through the Back Door. Americans love Italy. My Italy guidebook, I think, is the best-selling guidebook in the United States to any foreign destination, and it's far and away our best-selling tour, and we've done 13 TV shows on Italy, far more than any other country. When you think about Italy, first of all, my mark of a good traveler is somebody who likes Italy. I meet many people that say, oh, they hate Italy. It was body odor and traffic jams and people temper tantrums and people getting ripped off and stray hairs and, you know, chaos. Well, that's not a very good traveler. They should go to Denmark or something like that and have a good time.
Sure.
People who like Italy, to me, they roll with the punches. They accept it on its terms. Now, if you like Italy as far south as Rome, continue going further south because it gets better. If Italy is getting on your nerves by the time you get as far south as Rome, I would say do not go further south because it gets worse. Italy intensifies as you plunge deeper. Italy in the extreme is Sicily. Now, Sicily doesn't have all the money to give it the great art of Florence and Rome and Venice. That's what distinguishes those three cities, is they had so much, you know, so much money to buy all that great culture. Sicily is just culture in the rough, and it's a fascinating kind of baklava of different cultures. You've got Spanish and Middle Eastern and North African and Crusader and Viking and Italian all together there, and it's just a really interesting destination in its own. I think Sicily is very exciting. It's hot. Very hot in the summer. I would do it off season for sure, and I think it's underrated.
It's a lot bigger than most people realize, and I was just wondering what area to focus on in Sicily.
Well, what I've long done is look at other experts, how they put together itineraries for advice on how to use your time smartly. You don't need to take a tour to steal its itinerary and do it yourself. Sicily is a very popular tour, part of our tour program, and if people went to ricksteves.com, go into the tour department, just look at the itinerary we have to Sicily and then do that on your own. It could be just wonderful. Also, all 100 of my TV shows, the scripts are available on my website, so people can just download the script and see what I would cover. And I should mention also, we've got like 150 hours of archives of all the shows that have aired on WILL radio, and they're available there, and you could find the interviews I've had with my Sicilian friends and get a lot of information that way. But you're right, Sicily is big. You could spend 13 days there. We have a 13-day tour, and it's frustrating, but there's more stuff we want to do even at that. So consider Sicily. Also remember, there's a beautiful overnight boat ride from Naples down to Sicily, which is a good way to kick things off. And also remember, fly open jaws. That means into one city and out of another city. I would recommend flying into the north of Italy somewhere, working your way down to Sicily. That works you into the more demanding and challenging parts of Italy. And then finish off with the flurry in Sicily and fly home from Syracuse or Palermo or whatever. It's no more expensive, really, and it's very efficient.
We're going to have to stop. I'm really sorry to say I want to thank the caller. We got some others we can't take. We've just come to the end of the time. It has gone very fast, as it always does when we have Rick on. I would just say again, you know, listen in for his program on Saturdays at noon here on WILL Radio. You can see Rick Steves Europe on WILL TV Saturday afternoons, 5:30. You can go down to the bookstore and look for his books, and he's authored a number of them. You can go to his website, but you also particularly might want to take a look at his book, Travel as a Political Act. I think he has some really interesting things to say about why it is we travel, what some of the benefits of travel are. And it's published by Nation Books. And if you call in and make a contribution at the $60 level, we'll send you a copy with our thanks. And would you, we got just time to say, Rick, thanks very much. We certainly appreciate it. You've always been real generous with your time. And once again, we just say, we can't thank you enough.
Well, WILL has a warm spot in my heart. I can promise you that. We go way back, and thanks a lot. Happy travels.
All right. Will, WILL program is made possible by the Illinois Shakespeare Festival, presenting Midsummer Night's Dream, Richard III, The Tempest, and Scapin from June 25th through August 8th at the Ewing Manor in Bloomington. More information at festival.org or 309-438-8110. We got to go. Turn things over to the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you very much, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the program, we'll talk about traveling. We'll talk about exploring our backyard, enjoying the great outdoors in Illinois. We'll hear about the state's most scenic sites. Our guest will be naturalist and photographer Susan Post. She'll join us this afternoon following the 1 o'clock news. Let's turn our attention now to commodity prices in Kansas City. July wheat is trading at $6.50 and a quarter. That's up $2 and a quarter. September, $6.60 and a half, up $2. In Chicago, July, $6.02, up $6. September, $6.30 and a quarter, up $5 and three quarters. July corn, $4.45, up $9 and a quarter. September, $4.53 and a half, up $8 and three quarters. December, $4.66 and three quarters, up $8 and three quarters. March, $4.77, up $8. July beans, $12.78 and three quarters, up $32 and three quarters. August, $11.95 and a quarter, up $20. September, $11.20.